As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
.755 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back to 755 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic. I'm with my co-host, Erica Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's going on, Eric?
I don't know. What's up, Dave?
Not much, man. I was just looking at, I was kind of going all over the internet this morning, checking out stuff. And what jumped out to me on a positive, because the Braves could use positives right now, was the catch that Michael Harris made last night in Double A. And it was Andrew Jones-like. I mean, that was as good a catch as you'll see, I think, in the majors this year.
As far as going
horizontal, you might see somebody go higher over a fence or whatever, but that was impressive. And then he had the wherewithal to get up, throw home, and keep the guy from tagging and scoring. How did the guy not score on that play? Unless he just didn't think he had any chance of catching it and had a big lead and had to go back.
You're talking me into it. I don't like to get too excited over prospects, but, you know, seeing that highlight and his numbers and his swing, you know, it's hard not to get excited about him.
He's a five-tool stud, dude. There aren't many can't misses. There aren't many at all, and he's a can't miss. I will go on the record as saying he is a can't miss. People can keep this highlight and show it to me 10 years from now. So you remember when you said he was a can't miss?
I've seen so many can't misses. I don't like even putting the label on somebody. So that's a bold move, but I'm proud of
you. The last one I said can't miss on was Acuna.
Well, you got that right.
And before that, I mean, that was an obvious one. He had to be a dumbass not to get that one. And I don't remember the one before that. You know, but I was wrong, like on Jason Hayward, because I didn't see the hole in his swing that I should have listened to some people who said.
Well, people were saying Freddie. Yeah.
Terry Pendleton was the one who said Freddie Freeman is the one you guys need to be focusing on. He's going to be the one he's got the swing.
See, and that's the thing about prospects too, is it's like if Jay Hay had this absurd power tool.
Right.
Like he's hitting balls over the cars in the parking lot and
breaking windows.
And it's, you know, if you watch Freddie, I watched Freddie in the minor leagues and I wasn't that impressed with him, but I knew he was a solid player. Like you could look at Freddie and just think, I don't really know what's wrong with him. There's nothing he's doing. He's not hitting moonshots. You know, he seems to be picking everything at first base. He has good at bats. He looks like he's always balanced. That was what impressed me the first time I saw him play in the minors. Never looked off balance. But that's not something that's going to just – it's not eye-popping. Nobody freaks out about somebody's balance. But that's kind of what I think is tough about a lot of prospects is you freak out about their athleticism and everything. And I always try to tame it because I've seen so many over the years, especially when you're at the lower levels. There's always this guy in A-ball that's just oh, my – Brandon Wood. Brandon Wood hit 48 homers in A-ball one year. And we're just like, this guy's Babe Ruth. But we couldn't execute the pitches that you needed to execute to get him out. But Harris, man, he's getting me excited.
And it's a guy like Hayward, he could, with that power tool in the minor leagues, especially back then, scouting's a little better now in the minor leagues than it was back then. But back then, teams weren't going to exploit the hole in his swing in the minor leagues.
Right. And nobody practiced that pitch up and into a lefty.
Right. So he just destroyed AAA or Double A pitching. I don't even think he played AAA before he came up, did he? anyway, he that power tool, you know, because he's hitting home runs in spring training, mostly, you know, batting practice home runs where he's breaking car windows. And he hit a few in the games, too. I remember at Lakeland, he hit one over the roof of that batting cage facility mm-hmm. of right field. So it wasn't just in batting practice, but again, it's spring training, you know. Yeah. There's not guys that are looking at film and video and exploiting weaknesses, but once teams found it,
they just all live over. There.
And yeah. You can never change a swing and adapt and make those adjustments.
Yeah.
And it, that, you know, was, I mean, his swing.
I love Jay Hay. So it's tough. Like, the conversation's tough for me. But, it, you know, I remember when we were playing the Phillies, that you know, he had a pretty good year in 9. He was decent in 10. But I just remember slowly seeing Chooch, their catcher, just, I mean, it just set up inner half and just put his glove belt high and up for series after series, and that starts getting around the league. And that's what's tough about getting, for me, super excited about offensive stats in the minors, mm-hmm. is the reason the pitchers are there is because they're not quite able to execute that pitch. And to Jay Hay's credit, when they missed down away out over the plate, he destroyed it every time.
Yes.
You know, but you'd even see teams try to trick him, and they'd go up and in, and then try to fool him with something down away, and he'd just yoke it.
Yeah. And he still does that occasionally.
He still does. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like if Jay Hay didn't have all the hype he had when he came up.
Right.
If he just came up and you're like, we got this guy, you know, he's a good player. Yeah. He's had a great career. But it's when you set that bar as like what we're setting for Michael Harris, where there's nowhere to either it's a really thin line of living up to those expectations or being looked at the way we're talking about Jay Hay. But where it's Freddie, he's exceeded all that.
Right. If the roles had just been reversed.
Yeah. Freddie would be like, he's who we thought.
They were locked at the hit coming up in the minors for three levels.
Yep.
And then Jay Hay gets up here a year before Freddie. He's in the opening day lineup. Freddie doesn't get called up till the end of the year. And if that had been reversed and Freddie had made the opening day lineup and Jay Hay had spent another year down in the minor leagues and everybody was focused, it would have been he would have been viewed totally different.
Yeah.
And he did remember, he was elected to start in the All-Star game as a rookie before he got hurt.
Yep.
He was raking. And then he got hurt. It hurt his power because it was his wrist, I think. It was his wrist or his hand. It hurt his power. Didn't hit much home runs at all in the second half. But he did have the one 27 homer season, I think it was.
Yep.
But that was the outlier. I mean, people expected that. Here we go. This guy's 30-30 type guy.
And
that just wasn't the player he was. I will say that he's probably exceeded expectations defensively.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's far below offensive, but exceeded them defensively.
For me, he's the best right fielder I had in my career.
Yeah.
You know, and I had Ichiro, too.
And he could even play a solid center.
Solid center. Jay Hay could throw, covers a ton of ground. And
that's 6'5".
And he's a dude you want on your team because he shows up every day to work and plays every day, plays his ass off, always a good attitude, always laughing. You know, and I think that's one of the areas where it's kind of unfair to put these expectations on prospects. But you see a guy doing what Michael Harris is doing, how can you not get excited?
Yeah, it's legit. I mean, I saw him do it in spring training against some good, pretty decent pitching, too. Yeah. He faced some good, pretty good pitchers in some lineups because he started a bunch of spring training games. Started some the year before and then this year. So he's there's no doubt in my mind about that guy. But you are out in Seattle. You see what can happen if a team's not, if there's any doubt about bringing a guy up. There's never going to be 100% certainty. But look, Hellenic was like pretty much viewed can't miss out there, right?
Oh, they were begging for him to make the opening day roster.
And look what he's done.
But that's another thing is I think that, you know, maybe – you get these expectations on you that you're going to be this superstar, all-star player right away. And then he's coming up and trying to be it right away.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he has this light tower power, but it doesn't play, you know, against major league pitching. He needs to set his sights on being 280 with 15.
Yeah.
And I think he comes up and he thinks he's got to hit 330 with 40 or he's a failure.
Yeah.
And you can watch the guy and see how much he's pressing during games. I mean, he looks tense.
Yeah.
And uncomfortable. And I think all that pressure's kind of, you know, it's just mounted and built to him and he's not handling it well. And they finally got to the position, you know, they thought they'd let him play every day finally this year.
Yeah.
He's hit like $126 and went back to AAA.
Yeah. Jared Kelenic this year because he had a good spring. Hit three homers, 883 OPS in the spring. Comes up, and this is his second time up.
Yep.
Because he played 93 games last year.
Yep.
And hit 181.
And still made the opening day roster.
With a 615 OPS. My question is, how do you keep a guy, a prospect at age 21 up for 93 games, almost 400 plate appearances, hitting 181 with a 615 OPS, 106 strikeouts and 337 at bats? That's not good for anybody.
No, but when you give up Edwin Diaz for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like the organization has to make that trade look good.
And then they just didn't want to send him down because what it can do to a guy, but they should have, it backfired on him. And then this year he's up for 30 games and he's even worse. He had 140 with a 509 OPS in 96 plate appearances this year in 30 games before he got sent back down.
And I bet you he's raking in AAA.
And AAA.
No, he's only played two games.
Yeah, he's
only
played two games.
But I bet you he'll rake there.
But last year in AAA.
Oh, yeah.
320 with 1,016 OPS.
Yeah. So that for me is when it's, you know, the major leagues is tougher, but for me, that's when a guy is struggling to handle the pressure and expectations on him. You know, he's trying to do too much when he gets up to the majors. Yeah. You go back down to the minors, you're kind of down on yourself. It takes some pressure off the games. The pitching's not as good. You relax. You know, you're not getting called up in the next couple of weeks, and all of a sudden you're hitting 320.
Yeah. Michael Harris. This is his second full season of pro ball, right? He's drafted in 19 out of Stockbridge High in 19, third round. What a steal. This is his second full season. Last year at Rome, he had 294, 798 OPS. Okay. But after he hit a ton for long stretches. I mean, there were times where it was really impressive, right? It was there. And then this year, he gets promoted to Double A, and he's played 35 games. He's hitting 299, 845 OPS, four homers, 12 doubles, two triples. He's stolen 10 bases in 35 games, 13 attempts. And another thing that's really impressive for me, 352 OBP. In this day and age, that's like a 400 OBP a few years ago, you know? I mean, that's solid for a guy with some power.
That's putting together good at-bats.
Right. So it's really good numbers, but it's not those kind of numbers that are like just astounding, like why is he still in the minor leagues? You know, he's still putting up really good numbers for where he is, 21 years old, 2 years out of high school, a third-round pick. I mean, phenomenal prospect, but he is where he needs to be. And I think they need to promote him to AAA like midseason if he keeps doing what he's doing. But there's no rush. I mean, could he be up here this year? Yeah, if the Braves have a need, you know. Yeah. I mean, if they're really struggling and they're close and they have an injury and they think he could be the guy, but you got to be careful with this. You can't just be out of desperation, which you don't have to worry about Alex Anthopoulos doing that.
For me, the ideal situation is you avoid having to send him down at least. You know, so you call him up early to mid-August if you feel like he can help you. If he's not helping you, you let him ride out September with that extra roster spot. And the next year you tell him, like, look, you know, we gave you a look last year. Things didn't go great for you. You got to make this team. And if they have a crazy spring training, you're like, you know, you give him a shot to actually be on it. But there's nothing more deflating, you know, than getting sent down mid-season. And getting called into that, like, you already know you suck. But when it's, all right, I'm going back to AAA, I failed. You know, there's trying to make the team. Maybe you sign a veteran and you're going to roll with him for a little while and get the guy some more at-bats. But nothing hurts your confidence more than just swallowing your pride, packing those bags. Every guy gives you that sad pat on the back, you know, on your way out of the clubhouse.
It's all right, kid. You'll be back.
We'll you're like, fuck, I don't know. I don't know if I am. This league's pretty tough, you know.
And like you said, the good thing is, I mean, they have those extra roster spots in September. And depending on where this team is, who knows where this team's going to be. But you can bring them up in September like Freddie Freeman did.
Yep.
You get a couple starts. You get a bunch of pinch and plate appearances. but it's not hurting your development because the minor league season's over.
Yep.
So then you're up here and you can watch the guys and all that, which he's already got to do two spring trainings, and I think that's going to be hugely beneficial for him. But to get to watch the guys in actual regular season, and they could be in a playoff push. Yeah. And they could be in a playoff push, so I don't know if they'd want to use one of those spots on it, but I think they still could and should just to have him there to see that. Because it helped some guys last year to see that, to be around that.
Well, he's like, he's fast. You know, you can use him on defense taxi and stuff. Squad.
Yeah, you could have him run. Like, you know, pinch right run. Now you've only got Heredia to do that pinch run for you. Or you had to use Max Fried some last year. So that would be a very valuable.
Or if he comes up in August and he rakes, I mean, maybe he makes the postseason roster, which, you know, that's a lot of pressure. But you've already got the biggest hurdle, which is a little bit of big league success out of the way.
Right. At worst, you could have him on the taxi squad like Ed Pache that year. He went in the NLCS and filled in admirably. Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If I had to guess, I think we see him this year, even if it's late season call up. But I think we see him this year. Maybe it's just September, but I think they would do it because they know he's going to be competing for an opening day roster spot, the starting job next year in spring training. I really believe that. So I think if it's pretty obvious that that's the case, you could add him to the 40 because why not? You're going to be doing it in the offseason. Are you going to be doing it next spring anyway?
Yeah. And it seems like teams are steering away from the service time manipulation stuff. I don't know if it was like a, you know, kind of a handshake agreement with the union or something like that, but there was a lot of prospects that made opening day rosters this year that you would have normally seen their clocks manipulated.
Well, and some really good ones, that new rule, they get a full year of service time if they get like rookie of the year or runner up for, you know, if they get votes for certain rewards and all that. Well, if you're a team, you're looking at that going, okay, I gave up a full year of service time and I didn't bring this guy up until July. We could have got two more months out of him.
Which if you got a guy like Acuna and you call him up late May, he's probably still going to win rookie of the year.
Yeah, so Acuña would have been a classic case of this new rule. He would have been up opening day because of this new rule. Acuña would have been, no doubt. And I think Michael Harris could be the same thing because he's a rookie of the year type guy, type talent. So if you think there's a chance he could get rookie of the year, a runner-up, whatever that – I have to look at the rule, but they get a full year of service time, then you're shooting yourself in your foot.
Yeah, because you either want him to fail and not get that award.
By not getting those extra 2 months out of him when he might have helped you win some games.
Yeah.
And he's going to be eligible for arbitration anyway and for free agency, and you didn't even get the full time out of him.
Yeah.
So that's a good rule. I like that rule. They could make it even stronger if they have to, but I think for this year it worked.
Yeah.
It did its intended purposes. One of the few rules that MLB has done that actually is working. Unlike the extra innings rule that you're not a fan of, and I don't think at this point many Braves fans are a fan of. I like the rule in principle, but, man, it really has not worked out for the Braves. They just have not figured out how to do it. They've had bad luck doing it.
They did it yesterday, and they still lost.
Even when they score, they lose because they don't score enough. Even when they score a run, the other team scores more. But, man, that they have sucked in extra innings since that rule went into place.
And I can't figure out, you know, I mean, because I'm rooting for the Braves. I can't figure out if I hate the rule just because it hasn't worked for them. Like, I don't feel like I don't know if they've won a single game with that
rule.
They
have, but not many.
You know, it feels like it benefits them 1 out of 20 games and hurts another 19.
They went 5-9 in extra innings last year. They are 0-2 this year.
So 5-11. Yeah.
That's not good for a team that won the World Series last year.
You know, sometimes I like it when I'm going to try to see a game through.
I like it.
But
because of that.
I don't know. I mean,
I think we would have been there for 4.5 hours yesterday if that rule was not in place.
It's hard to swallow getting a walk-off two-run homer, a two-run solo shot hit off you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Chavez makes one bad pitch and they get walked off.
Yeah. And it wasn't even that bad of a pitch.
No, it was just caught a little too much plate, and he led the guy out there with a cutter, and he ran into it. But a guy ran into it.
Oh, God.
A two-run solo shot. And that ball,
solo shot.
That ball hit, what, halfway up that screen?
Oh, my God. It did, man. And that was one – that was – there were like four home runs in this series, or five, when I said, okay, that ball is flying just like it always did.
Yeah.
And that leads me to – what we've discussed here is how different the ball is behaving now in some places and not others. And I'm totally convinced it's because of the humidor.
Me too.
Some places are either turning it off. They're not putting the balls in there early enough for it to have its effect, but it's got to be the balls, because it literally, the ball was flying like the Ozuna home run. These are flying up in the second deck, which we did not see in the first month of the season.
No,
especially like out in San Diego and at Truist Park and Dodger Stadium, balls were going up that high. And then when they got near the warning track, they're dropping like ducks that have been shot. And that ball just kept going.
I was watching Juan Soto highlights. You know, for whatever reason, a clip came up on my feed today. And the balls he was hitting the last 2 years, he's still raking this year, but his homers are going out, you know, 5, 10, 15 rows. He was hitting balls that looked like they were 600 feet, you know, the way the ball had been flying. And I agree with you. You know, it's... You haven't seen too many of those, like Ozuna hit and balls, the high fly balls that just don't come down.
Or like that game ender.
Yeah, I mean that ball was. I don't know how Statcast does the math, and I'm, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that Statcast toned those numbers down. You know, when you like that ball Ozuna hit, at Fenway, and we're like, we've never seen a ball hit there before, and they're like 430.
Right.
You know, it was a way to.
What'd they call that one yesterday?
I didn't see, but I bet they'll say 421. Even though it was 50 feet high when it ran over the 400-foot
fence. I think it was 480 at least.
But I think you're right. I think the humidor, that's kind of what I'm wondering. And I have a hard time wrapping my head around that it could help in places that it's humid.
But the thing is, like Dr. Wills pointed out, the balls just behave differently because the seams don't do the same thing as the leather.
Right.
So in some places where it's more humid, the balls are tightening up, drying out, if you will, hardening up a little bit, but the seams aren't. So the seams are still raised. Mm. In other places that are dry, they're becoming more moist. Right? So the seams theoretically wouldn't be as high in those places. So it's just all different variables, and that's what MLB did not take into account. They thought it would simply be put humidors in every place. The balls are going to be all the same.
You got different weather everywhere.
They didn't ask doctors about, you know, physicists about Dr. Wills, ball deconstructionist, about the effects and how long it takes. Because they did, for one thing, they're not putting them in there long enough. Like 2 weeks, they said that's not long enough to have the full effect. And is every humidor working? Are all the balls being kept inside there? Because you watch batting practice and guys are using balls that aren't in humidors.
They're flying.
And they're flying like always, like usual.
Yep.
And then they get into games and they're dying like ducks, you know, shot over the warning track.
Okay, so that makes sense though, because, you know, so weather's always been a factor. April, you know, you go into Philly in April, you might get away with one. You go into, you know, even some of the like Citi Field. You go into Citi Field in April.
Right.
You're going to get away with some mistakes. But as the weather heated up, this is the way it used to be before the ball just started going 700 feet if you barreled it at any angle. But it used to be, you know, April, May, you knew you were going to get away with some stuff. Then once it got hot in the summer, the ball was just going to cut through that air because it was going to get hotter. The ball was going to fly. It makes sense to me, though, that if the seams are the same now, so they're raised in those areas, then that cool, you know, early season weather actually had an effect on the baseball again, where whatever they did before, it didn't matter what the weather was. That thing was flying out of the park.
Jason wrote a great article today. Jason
Stark, I saw that.
About the Phillies. And I think the Braves are the other team that has been affected like that, because the Braves are another team built
for power,
for better or worse,
for the three-run homer.
Home runs.
Yep.
For the home runs. And all they were hitting were solos early, but even then, they weren't hitting nearly as many home runs as they thought they should have hit, right?
Or how many three-run fly balls to the warning track.
Right. And the Phillies are the same thing. The Phillies go out west to Seattle, and I forgot what else. It was San Francisco?
L.A. So I think they went to – I think they played the Dodgers.
Okay. So they went out there, and all of a sudden, they were getting the home runs that they've been looking for all season, and they weren't getting before.
Yeah.
Guys were hitting the same thing because they had like the highest hard hit rate – disparity between hard hit rate and actual balls leaving the park. Really similar to the Braves. Braves early on had these hard hit rates and barrel rates and everything that should have been expected. Slugging was much, much higher than they were actually doing. The Phillies,
I like that ball Acuna hit that had 100% hit probability, right. You know, got caught at the track.
And the Phillies are the same way, even more so probably, because they're totally built for home runs. So if you're not hitting home runs, they go out west and they're getting them, and then they come home and they're not. So it's like
something with the weather and the ball. And
it's not a coincidence, man.
No.
And I think the Braves really affected them early. Am I suggesting that that's been their biggest problem? No, not at all. But that's been one of their problems.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even close to being their biggest problem. But that hurts. There are a lot of games that they had balls die at the warning track in that early
road important trip to situations
San Diego
too.
San Diego and LA, man, they were balls just falling. And when you're a team built for home runs, it's going to affect you more than a team that knows how to play a lot of small ball. And they don't do that.
But there's not a lot of those teams either.
No, there's not. There's not. But some teams like the Yankees have two guys who can hit them out of the Grand Canyon. And they have, as a manager said last week, a little league ballpark. Because right field is ridiculous there.
Yep.
So you combine that with two guys who can hit them 900 feet. Judge hits them out anywhere. Stanton's going to get some cheapies to right field.
Well, that's a great point. Yeah, because you got Rizzo. He gets to hit to the short porch.
Oh, he's had some
cheap ones. Donkey power anyway, but LeMahieu can go opposite field.
Yeah.
If Stanton or Judge get him, I don't care if they're hitting a ball that's been in the lake for 3 months. Yeah. You know, that thing's going out.
Yeah, they hit him 120 miles.
It's not going to affect the guys.
Rizzo's
with the
had a couple
crazy
of cheapies
power.
That I saw.
Oh, yeah. He hit a few, and he looked at the dugout and was like,
routine fly balls. Yeah.
He threw his hands up like, I thought I popped up, you know, jogging to first base laughing.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting how this all plays out, but it's no doubt had an effect, man.
Yeah.
Another Jason had a great stat. He got this from Elias. The Braves did something yesterday that no team had done since the Dodgers in August 2020. They led entering the bottom of the 9th, 10th, and 11th and lost the game.
I don't count it. That's only a two-year-old stat.
Yeah, only other team in the last 20 years to lead the 9th, 10th, the Dodgers in 2020. But you're right. The game's totally different. So what happened before that rule really doesn't matter a whole lot. I mean, it's a much more impressive stat if you did it before that, or a much more depressive stat.
You'd have to look up teams that had led by two. You know, because it's basically what a one-run lead.
You're right.
It's not safe because you're getting a free run if you get a single. And then if you manufacture a run, there's a two spot. So you'd have to go back and look at teams that had done it up by two. And that's so much harder to come back from.
I tell you what, man, what has hurt the Braves in some of these games, and I have to go look it up, is when you're not going with your real horses in some of those situations, if you're resting a couple of guys, you use your pen a lot, like the Braves did before yesterday, and you got to rely on guys like Chavi, God bless him. But you don't want Chavi pitching with a guy at second base to start an inning.
Well, you can't. Chavi's a guy that can't afford to walk somebody or give up free bases. You know, he's pitching to contact, and if you give him a full inning, you know, he's going to give up a hit.
Chavi's going to give base.
Up. Right. Somebody's going to flare a single to right or get a knock off of Chavi every inning. But if you give him an inning to work through, he's going to bear down and find a way out of it. And this takes away that ability from him.
Yeah.
Now he has to be
second,
perfect.
You can't pitch contact, really.
You tell Chavi he gives up his leadoff double, and he's going to give up a hit every inning anyway. You know, so now he has to be perfect. If you brought Strider in that situation, there's a good chance you get out of it because he might strike out the side, but that's Chavi's style.
You need a Strider, a Kimbrell, a Kenley Jansen.
You have to have strikeout guys, or you have to walk the first guy and hope for a double play.
And even Kenley's not a total strikeout guy.
Kenley can give up a bloop single, but Kenley's thing is kind of similar to Chavi, where he's giving up balls that are 47 miles per hour off the bat. One of those is going to fall in.
Right.
Somebody's going to strike out, and he'll get the other two guys out, however, by throwing strikes.
But let's not put Kenley and Chavi in the same sentence.
No, I'm just saying, as far as like contact goes, way extreme, but he's going to get
a better version of Chavi.
Yeah, obviously. He's going to get bad contact. You have to be a strikeout guy to really feel good in those situations.
Right, right.
When I give up a leadoff double, you know, when I was at my best, my mindset was, well, that guy's scoring. Let's not let it get any worse. And sometimes you get out of it, sometimes you don't. But that mindset keeps it to a one spot. And giving up one never really hurts you.
Yeah.
Unless it's a unless it's the situation that you get thrown into in extras where you can't have that mindset. You have to be perfect now. It's just such a tough position to put a relief pitcher in.
I looked this up yesterday, and I know it probably doesn't feel this way to a lot of fans who are very understandably pissed right now or frustrated. But the Braves, since the beginning of last season, before yesterday, had been 95-2 in games in which they led at the end of the eighth inning, including 16-0 this year. I mean, Kinley's been he's been great, man.
He's been great. Perfect.
That was a great piece of hitting yesterday by Wong to start that inning.
Yep.
That was just – that was a good piece of hitting.
He's a good player.
Yes, and he's very good defensively. Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. I thought a big positive to come out of this. It's hard to take positives, I know, for fans when you lose 2 out of 3 to Milwaukee. But, man, they were in all those games. They could have easily won, swept that series, but at least won 2 out of 3. The big positives were a couple of guys that have been waiting for to come alive. Marcell Ozuna is finally hitting again.
Yep.
They got to have that continue, obviously, because he has sucked most of the year. I thought a big positive Tuesday, Tucker Davidson. I was not expecting that.
No.
Because he wasn't doing much in AAA. He only came up because it fell on his day, you know?
Yeah. He threw great.
5 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, and a 3-0 shutout. If he pitches like that again, you're going to keep him on the rotation. He's going to get another chance to start, obviously. He could be your fifth guy that we thought Elder was going to be. But we'll see.
He's got more like experience. He was really pitching in that start, too. You know, he was mixing it up a lot more. He wasn't trying to just strike guys out and throw hard. You know, I felt like he really pitched and had a good mix, which, you know, that's how you get out of jams.
And he's got some experience. He's pitched in majors a couple of years, pitched in a World Series, got knocked around, but he pitched in a World Series. So it's not like, you know, Elder's stepping in with no experience at all and figuring out as he goes. Davidson knows what it takes to succeed this level. And can he do it? That's the only question. But I like him for that spot. I'm more comfortable with him than anybody else they've got right now, if you're not going to use Strider there. And you can't use Strider there now because there's such a need in the bullpen now.
With Matzik down, I think – so Matzik was your strikeout guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a strikeout guy. Matzik was your strikeout guy for the last 2 years. And obviously, Strider – I mean, I don't know what his numbers are.
He's phenomenal.
But he's got to be up there in K-rate with anybody in the league.
He's your Josh Hader, man. You got to use him like Josh Hader right now. Hader used to be used multi innings a lot.
Yep.
A lot, not anymore, but he did. He used to a lot. You got to use him like a young Josh Hader, right? Because he can go 2 innings now, 2 high leverage innings.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance that he's going to strike out just about everybody. You know, I mean, he is legit. Long term, I still think you have to look at him as a starter, give him that chance to work on that changeup a little bit more, because he could be devastating. Whatever role he's going to pitch in, he can be devastating.
And I think that's probably what's holding him back from getting those starts is, you know, one, when a guy comes up to the big, you want them to have success because the confidence is the biggest hurdle.
Yeah.
But I think what's holding him back from getting those starts is that third pitch. And I'm trying to think of starters. Gossman's kind of a two pitch guy, you know, and there's a lot of guys, but look at all the shit Gossman had to go through to get to where he is to be a two pitch major league starter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an uphill battle that he could lose a lot of confidence trying to start and getting humbled, or you can just let him pitch in the big leagues and blow everybody away for a year, know he can get big league hitters out and then try him starting.
And then he has a whole offseason and spring training to work on the changeup.
Prepare. Yeah.
I mean, if he adds a good changeup, because he's shown it, if he adds a legit changeup, oh, my God.
Well, and that's perfect, too, because you go into spring training, and he knows he can be in the major league bullpen. And this is what I tell him, too, is like, look, you're on our team. Mm-hmm. We want you to start. If this doesn't work, you're in our pen, and you're doing the same shit you did last year, because you can easily tone down his innings. But you tell him, throw a shit ton of changeups and find a way to make that pitch work this spring, and we'll give you a rotation spot.
Yeah.
If it fails, you know, if you're struggling with it, rather than have you go down and start and try to figure it out in AAA, you have so much value in that Josh Hader role for us. We're keeping you on the big league staff. And that's look how much money Andrew Miller made in that role.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you can't have a good career doing that.
And another thing, Kenley Jansen's only signed to a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I mean, is it far-fetched to see Strider as closer next year?
The only obstacle would be if Matzik kept throwing the ball the way he had.
I want Strider there more than Matzik.
I agree.
And the thing with Strider, the only reason I worry at all about him as a starter is he is such a machismo.
Oh yeah, he's blowing everybody away. Aggressive
swagger that I find it hard to believe that he could dial it back and throw the fastball 96, 97. Because how many innings can you go throwing 99 to 100 fastballs over and over and over again? I don't know, man. I don't know if I want him doing that. But when you got that fastball, you got to learn to rein it in. I don't know that I want to even ask him to try to do that. But so I don't know.
He strikes me as a reliever when I watch him pitch.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's just the role he's embracing because the role he's been put in. But he reminds me, his breaking ball is not Kimbrel's, but his fastball is Kimbrel's, where it's not just 98, it's a sneaky 98, and it plays up. And I think his spin, you know, in a major league fastball, if you're getting above 2200 spin on a four seam, it's pretty damn good. And he's throwing him 2350, 2400. And that's when you're seeing that ride on it that guys obviously know he's challenging him with the heater. And he's beating him with it anyway. Like, he's just blowing it past him. And that's that ride you're seeing that I don't know that you can teach, but when guys have it, it's tough to hit.
And it's easy 99 gas. And he does that spin. Like, hitters want to beat him so bad. He does that little flourish at the end. Like, I got you. You know, it's just a badass, man. The dude's a bad. That mustache. I mean, and you know, from the bottom, waist down, he's Kimbrel with the legs.
Yeah.
Similar body all over as Kimbrel.
Yeah.
Same height, but those legs, he's getting so much power from those legs, which is why I think I like him, his chances to stay healthy, even though he had Tommy John 3 years ago. You know, it's effortless gas. I mean, I know it's not effortless. I know he's throwing, maxing out, but it doesn't look controlled. Like it.
Yeah.
He's not grunting and falling all over the place.
And that's the thing is when you're in control – he's trying way harder to throw that ball than you think.
Right.
Like he's putting something on it every time he throws it.
Yeah.
But his athleticism and his body control is so good that it looks effortless. And that's just as big a part of staying healthy is the control in your delivery versus, like, you see some guys, they're just flying all over the place, like Alvarado for the Phillies.
Yeah.
He's almost in the dugout by the time his delivery is done.
Yeah.
And the ball's going everywhere too. But you watch Strider, it's pretty consistent with his delivery, and it looks easy because of how controlled he is. Even though I could tell you he's not trying to throw 92 when he steps on the mound.
Yeah. He only threw, a lot of people said, why take him out yesterday? Because he had thrown two innings two nights before. And they're trying to be careful with this guy. Yeah, man, one day off. So they're easing him into pitching him more and more, you know, two times in 3 days in a very high leverage role.
And he'll probably be down today.
Yeah. Well, they're off today.
Well, there you go. He's definitely not pitching today.
And then he can pitch, you know, be ready Friday.
So tomorrow he's ready. Yeah. Right.
So I like that, the way they're using him. Because, man, he's throwing so hard that I hate to see him get I would just, if I were them, I'd be careful with this guy because he is special, special. That arm's special. Woo. His fastballs, he threw 11 pitches, 10 fastballs. Velo in the 10 in that inning, struck out all three guys. 98-9, 99-1. 99-9, 99-3, 99-9, 98-7, 100.6, 99-5, 99-8, 99-4. The lowest two were 98-7, 98-9. The highest was 100.6. Eight were 99.1 or higher.
God, it's so much different. I remember when J.J. Putz would touch 98.
Yeah.
And it was gas. And now you're talking about a guy sitting. He sat 98 to 101.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where he's living.
That's what he does. That's his
That's crazy. It's crazy to see.
And he does it. Like I said, it's easy gas too. That guy's, I don't know, man. If he is going to be your closer next year, if you don't even have him really worry about developing the changeup more and just have him more focus on that slider, boy, if he could get the kind of devastating slider Kimbrel had.
Yeah.
Man.
It wouldn't even be. I mean, that's why you saw, like, for Kimbrel, that's why you saw the insane strikeout numbers, because he had a fastball like Strider has. And if Kimbrel just had his fastball and a doo-doo slider,
yeah,
he's still a closer and having an amazing career like he did. But Kimbrel had a wipeout breaking ball.
Yeah. And Kimbrel's still really tough. I watched him the other day, but he's not close to being the Kimbrel he was. He
doesn't have that 99 anymore. No. It's 95 to 97.
Right. He's just a really good closer now. He's not, yeah, he's not the special elite top five type guys.
Yeah, he's just a really good reliever.
Yeah, yeah. I know they'd love to have Spencer Strider. I know they'd love to have Kenley Jansen. They probably wish they had spent the money on Kenley Jansen instead of waiting around and let the Braves sweep him up. Because
yeah, but they're happy with Freddie. He's
oh yeah. But they could have had both. You know.
Yeah. I mean, easy.
Yeah. They ended up paying Kimbrel.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Kenley had, by the way, had converted 26 consecutive save opportunities going back to July 22nd. In the 46 appearances since then, he's got a 1.71 ERA. So, I mean, this guy's he's still really good. And he's adapted too to not having the stuff he once had. I'm really impressed with what a pitcher he is.
Well, this is the thing about him is he does a great job of just mixing in that two seamer.
Yeah.
Mixing in a straight fastball, because, you know, obviously everybody's hunting the cutter and they really struggle to hit it, but once in a while they could run into it. And then he mixes in that two seamer and the swings he gets on those, or even when they just take it on the outside corner, you know, he's done a good job of, this is what you do is you start losing your stuff, but he's learned how to pitch as he's gotten older, and he's still got the extension. He's still got the cutter. I've been really impressed, because all I would see is just stuff of Dodgers fans complaining about Kenley, and is he going to get it back, or is he washed? Is he done? And then getting to watch him pitch this year, I'm like, that's about as good as you can ask for from a closer.
Yeah. So Ozuna, speaking of, 6-for-19 with 3 homers and 1171 OPS in his last 5 games. That is a sight for sore eyes. The Braves need that so badly, because, like I said, he had sucked before that. He was hitting 203 with 4 homers and a 582 OPS in his first 33 games. So he's really looked a lot better. That swing of his is finally, he's squaring up balls coming through. He's keeping a bat in the zone like he always does, but he just had been out of whack before that. And he wasn't hitting, he was popping up so many balls. But that, I thought he looked like the old Ozuna in the Milwaukee series and one game before that too. Austin Riley.
Go ahead. I just think that's like he's got a lot of moving parts in his swing.
His feet it's so unconventional.
There's so much going on, and he's just a freak. You know, he's just freakishly strong and has freak bat speed that it works for him. But there's just going to be phases where he does this for 2 weeks at a time, and then there's going to be phases where he struggles. You know, and it's just I don't know what's better. You know, would you rather have a guy that can't do what he can do when he's completely on?
It's kind of like Justin Upton.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of who it reminds me of, is like, you know, when he's on, there's nowhere to
carry your offense.
Yeah.
And when he's off, he's just a black hole in the lineup.
I think you can afford to have one or two of those in your lineup, but you can't have six in case they all go cold at the same time.
The Braves could afford it last year when they'd have like 5 other guys going at once. They can't afford it this year when they've had like 2 guys going maximum at the same time.
They need him this year.
Austin Riley hit a mammoth 3-run homer Wednesday, and they needed to see that so badly, because he has really struggled lately after that great first month. He's the first guy to homer twice off Corbin Burns since the beginning of the last season. The first guy to do it twice. That was his 8th homer of the year, but his first since May 2nd. In the 13 games between those home run games, he was 8-for-51 with 1 RBI, 4 walks, and 19 strikeouts. We talked about that, how being at home on the homestand with a new baby, how it could have affected him. Who knows?
I was up at 5:15 this morning.
The Braves offense scored 3 runs. They scored in 3 of the first 27 innings of that 3-game series. 3 innings out of 27 that they scored. The Brewers, they ran in some great pitching.
Yeah.
But last year they ran into great pitching, and that's who they hit the most last year, it seemed like, you know. And earlier this year, a couple times, they hit good pitching with the team they had last year. And the team this year should hit good pitching as well. That's almost the same guys, with the exception of Freddie, you know. Big exception. But Olsen's been fine. He's not as hot as he's going to get. but he's been okay. I mean, he had struggled though. He had struggled for a while, and early on he was, you know, OPS, and he was hitting like 400 early. We knew that wasn't going to last.
And he was getting hard hit balls that weren't falling. Now he was crushing it.
Right. Another positive, obviously, is Acuna's return after missing five games with that groin strain. That one first game back, I thought he really was classic Acuna, what he can do to a lineup, because he was on the bases every time. You know, had a couple walks, infield hit, reached on an error, stole a base, went to advanced on that fly out to advance to third. He was showing off those wheels and loving it. So that was a huge good sign. And the fact that he played right field yesterday after DH in the night before, I thought was really big in a day game. So that's really good. It's going to be interesting to see how they use him here in Miami, where he blew out his knee. Do you play him in the outfield? I heard BJ, Brian Jordan, say yesterday he wouldn't play him in the outfield at all there. I disagree with that. You got to get over that hurdle. I think you have to. It's three games. I think he's got to play one of those games in right field, or else it's just going to be thinking about it more, sitting in the dugout while he's DHing, going, they don't want to play me in right field because I blew my knee out of here.
Yeah. At some point, he's going to get out there. Remember, that's where he got hurt. And then at some point, he's going to have to make a similar catch it, and move on.
Yeah, and it's not like that field is like the old veteran stadium with seams like this between the turf, you know?
Right.
It just happened there. It was, you know. So, anyway, but that was good to see. That was a big plus. Olsen still leads the majors in doubles, 15, has an 820 OPS. But he's the only qualified batter on the team with an OPS over 800. They got another like 799. But, I mean, that's pretty bad, man. He hit 373, 479 OBP, and 1,089 OPS in his first 16 games as a Brave. Since then, 22 games, including the two-hit game yesterday, he's hit 171 with a 296 OBP and a 625 OPS. So,
do you remember that big Poppy quote? When he was talking about, you know, how much harder it is for him to hit because he gets everybody's best.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's the spot Olsen worked himself into with that hot start is that we're not going to let this guy beat us. Because if you watch, I mean, he gets pitched extremely carefully right now.
Especially with everybody else struggling, except for Riley for a long stretch was the only guy hidden.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously going to key on those two guys. And as a result, we've probably seen what we've seen the last couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, the other guys. Man, I just have – this year, it's like I've seen a different Ozzie Albies. He's not hitting the ball hard like he did in the past. I don't – he's got some swings that look so just blah, you know? He's not – doesn't look like the same guy to me. I don't know why.
Ozzie, for me, just depends on the type of at-bats he's having. You know, I feel like he gives up a lot of at-bats. Comes up and swings first pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's plenty of guys
– flips it out to left field, pops up.
Yep. In big situations too, you know, trying to do too much. But that's also, you know, that can be a result of the offense struggling and him wanting to step up.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I don't want to keep going back to Freddie, but I think that's something that they're missing. You know, I like watched the Dodgers game yesterday or 2 days ago, and Freddie comes up in a huge situation and just flicks a single to left. You know,
ball to the corner.
Yeah. But even just that mindset of not trying to do too much, watching your big dog go up there and just flick his single and keep the line moving, you know, I mean, that's contagious. And I think that they're in a position right now where a lot of guys are trying to fix it all in one swing.
Yeah. And that should not fall on Matt Olson, because that's not the type of player he is.
No, not him.
And
he walks.
Right. He walks and hits and launches towering fly balls, home runs to right field. I asked Matt Olson, by the way, last week on that one game where he hit two towering foul balls that were in upper deck and right field. I mean, they were moonshots that would have landed on top of the chop house if he'd have straightened them out a little bit. And he said, that's when I know I'm going good, when I'm starting to elevate to the pull side. So I think he's about to go on a tear. We'll see. They need it. They've got since the last four weeks, these guys have OPS under 600. Ozzie Albies, 598. Adam Duvall, who's having a bad year, 543, and Ozuna 521. Now, Ozuna at least is showing signs of coming out of it. They need a lot more from Duvall, a lot more from Albies. I'm glad to see Dansby finally hitting. You know, the last couple of weeks he's hitting, but they need more from him, obviously, and more consistency from him. But that's a good one. It's a good sign. But they just got to get a bunch of guys going at once, man. Four or five guys going at once like they did last year after they took off, they had so much of the lineup clicking at once.
I mean, that's the thing, is you can't have guys going that bad.
Yeah.
You know, like you can be off, or, you know, he's not really hitting right now. He's struggling, but you can't have, it's really hard to put together, to pile on runs when you have like three or four guys in your lineup that are going that bad where they're almost just an out.
And when your bullpen is not what it was last year because guys have been hurt, so you can't count on the bullpen holding it down for like five or six innings if necessary until the offense comes alive. Just real quick, the Braves hitters are tied for the major league lead with 370 strikeouts. Here's the one that's killing them. They're 16th in OPS at 684. They're behind the Mariners, barely ahead of the Cubs. They are tied with Baltimore for 20th in OBP with runners in scoring position, at 297. This is where this team is so different than last year's. Last year, with runners in scoring position, they led the majors in 822. At 822. They're 646 this year in OPS with runners in scoring position.
I mean, I wonder how much the balls changed that.
Well, I know Freddie's changed that a lot because he was a monster in those situations. Yeah. And Duvall was a monster last year. So you take out the two because Duvall's just not doing it this year.
Yeah.
But Freddie and Duvall were as close to automatic as just about anybody in the majors. Duvall, especially with two outs, but both of them were just last year with runners in scoring position were just beasts.
Yeah.
You don't have anybody doing that right now for them, and you got to get it.
Well, even knowing that, for me, the thing I hated when I was in those big situations was a guy like Markakis coming up that I know is going to take his damn single to left. So what you're trying not to get to that situation with him, the guy in front of him gets better pitches. When the guy on deck, okay, he might hit a three-run homer off you, but if you make your pitches, you know you're getting him out. I'm pitching around Olson. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like looking at the lineup, there's got to be some guys that are just getting the singles in those situations. And I think that's probably what's hurt him the most is those fly balls that are getting caught at the track were getting out of the park. Now you got your three spot. When that's a fly ball to the warning track, it's another zero.
Yeah. And just to make sure that I read my stats correctly here, the Braves are overall, and this is overall batting, they are 20th in the majors with a 297 OBP. 20th. Yeah. I mean, they are tied with Baltimore for OBP. That's because they're striking out so much. They're not drawing those walks. But they're striking out a ton, which is okay if you're going to also hit a bunch of home runs and get some walks, get some OBP. But they don't have any guys that are getting on base a lot this year at all. And then with OPS and runners in scoring position, like I said, 646 after leading the majors at 822 last year. Runners in scoring position, OPS. They are behind the Nationals and the Rangers in OPS with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
So those are big, huge disparities. And I know we're only a quarter of the way into the season, but those are huge disparities. So, and that's about it. You don't want your team to benefit by another team's injuries, but I know Braves fans are like Mets fans are waiting to see what happens with Scherzer, right? Because the Mets, they already had McGill down with biceps thing. DeGrom obviously is not pitched yet, and there's no timetable yet for him. Scherzer leads the game last night, pulls himself out of a game. So, you know, it was bad enough.
Yeah.
But he has a zinger, as he said, down his left side, which he's never had an injury on his left side, he said. But you said you thought it sounded like oblique, right?
Well, I mean, that's obviously bad karma, but that you know, to even hope for something like
right,
that.
Right. I'm not saying hope, and I'm just saying it is what it is. The Mets are, build on.
That would be the worst injury just for him because that's your pull side, and you can't throw without pulling with that oblique. So that's something you have to completely shut down.
Yeah.
You know, and wait on. I mean, when I saw him do it and he started going like this right away, I thought Tommy John because, a guy feels a pop on their elbow and they're like, well, that's it. You know it.
Right.
He didn't even try to throw a pitch. So, it's somewhat serious. But without him, and McGill, that's going to be tough for them because
they're lucky they got some depth, but yeah, those are.
I was watching though, man, and it was like, it's amazing when the Mets are playing well, that environment is incredible. Yep. And they've been playing well. They were winning again last night. It was just party time in that park. And then Scherzer pulled himself out of the game, and the air in that stadium just it was silent.
I hate to see it with any guy that's one of my favorite guys to watch. And he has been one of my favorite guys to watch a long time. The way he stalks the mound. Yeah, any baseball fan loves watching Scherzer. And you hate to see guys like that when they get older and the little things that never used to pop up start to bother him every five starts or so. Yeah, it's just like Charlie. You know, it's like little nagging stuff or little adjustments they can't make. Charlie has avoided injuries, thankfully. But last year, he had they had a couple of things. But you just hate seeing older guys start to kind of, I don't want to say break down because Scherzer's a long way from that, but just little stuff. You hate to see them where they can't just go out and be glorious for eight innings like they could for year after year after year.
Yeah. And then you pride yourself on, I take the ball and I throw and he's the last guy in the
world.
He's the last guy in the world you'd expect to pull himself out of a game. And he's learned that lesson the last few years. He's had like the hamstring and things popping up and trying to be careful, but yeah, I hate to see it too. It
sucks. I tell you what, it makes you appreciate Maddux because he was a man who knew his limits. And at the end, when he became a five and fly guy, he somehow managed to squeeze out another 5 years more than people probably thought and still be a good pitcher, you know?
Yep.
But he didn't stick around till seventh or eighth and get hurt.
No, he didn't.
And he wasn't trying to throw harder than he could either.
Nope.
But
yeah, it's a tough ball do getting what old Maddux sucks.
You're telling me, man.
Yeah.
All right.
I am telling
That's
you,
it. All right, everybody, hang in there. And I know this is your tough times for your Bravos, but you don't want to hear us say it's early, so we won't say that. But just keep in mind what happened last year. I know you can't count on doing that again. But they got a lot of pieces. They got a lot of pieces. And you know, Alex, if they're close and there's any chance, Alex is going to go out and get more. He's going to go out and get more if they need. If there's any chance of them contending, he's going to go out and get more because they're not going to follow up this season. They're filling that park, man, and they know how they're seeing the coffers get filled. And you don't do that by waving a white flag because your walk up crowds start to dwindle, and even tickets that you sold are not going to be used. So that atmosphere is not going to be there if you give up.
No, you got to keep this going.
So they and not that they're even thinking about that in May, but I'm just saying even in July. If they're close, they're going to add. I don't see this team subtracting under any circumstances. So, and they go to Miami this week. It ain't going to get easier because Miami's got a hell of a pitching staff.
Yeah.
But that's a team the Braves can beat if they just play well. And look at it this way. They almost took two out of three from the Brewers twice in 2 weeks. And the Brewers lead the Central easily.
In Milwaukee.
There you go. Against their best pitchers, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it. Thanks a lot, everybody. 7:55 is real. We're out.